The Dave Good Show, right? I have been doing this for a long time. I've been doing it for about 14 years. There's been 14 years of Dave Good Show, so I've got like a brief history of the Dave Good Show. Like, it started when I managed a movie theater. I would come home like at 1 a.m. It's like my late 20s, and that's like when everyone starts like cashing in their party lifestyle to like become normal. And so it used to be when I get done with work at the movie theater at like 1 a.m. I would have plenty of people to play video games and smoke weed with, and then suddenly I did not. And so I started making YouTube videos of myself and telling stories from my room and just like putting them on YouTube. And that's like when it started. And then when I moved to Minneapolis and started working at like with performing arts professionals, I got super paranoid about my YouTube videos and I deleted them. And then my cousin crashed my hard drive and that like Dave Good Show stuff just like disappeared into the ether, which is weird. I've got like whole categories of like student films, etc., like things that I've made that are just no longer. But I kind of, there's like, I like it in like a Blade Runner sense, Jenny Jones. I know that you're concerned, but you know, whatever, life is not permanent. And so then I started making Facebook videos when I moved here, because the same loneliness happened again, like right away. Like I moved to Minneapolis, there was like a rush of knowing people, and there was the same thing. I had all this time by myself, so I started making Facebook videos, which then the people I was worried that wouldn't like my Facebook videos actually liked my Facebook videos. And so then as my like legend of working with Patrick goes, is Patrick had gone through a breakup, and that's like my big secret to getting creative projects off the ground, is find someone who's just been through a breakup, because they need something to do with their time, right? It's like a win-win situation. And so I pitched a podcast to Patrick. I did not know how deep he was into audio at that time, you know, but so we did a podcast for like a period of time. And then I started to work in theater. And so then I started to do less stuff because I was like working on other people's shows. I was working for this guy named Myron Johnson, who's like super cool and taught me a lot about the creative process. And so then I just had this sense that Minneapolis had put this like ceiling on me. That's how I started to feel. I felt like people kind of like felt like I had my role and I did not like that. I did not like operating with a ceiling. And so I decided to move to LA where there would be no ceiling. And then I always thought I was going to give up the Dave Good Show, but then same thing, like things go south, I get lonely, etc. It's just like been this home for my creativity for like a super long time. I mean, it's more than a home for my creativity. I mean, it's like the foundation of my sanity, quite honestly. I mean, like, I don't know where I would be without this show. And so I had this whole saga of doing the Dave Good Show in LA, and that is like the podcast within this podcast is the story of me like producing in LA. Let's kind of skip over that. And then I moved back here after leaving LA, hooked back up with Patrick, and we started doing the podcast. But then like when it really went down is when my apartment burned down, right? And so I'd like moved here and then my apartment burned down, which is crazy. I went into work with Megan that morning because I didn't know what to do. I just felt like I would just like make some coffees. And she was like, wait, what happened? Why are you here? You should probably go home, Dave. And so anyways, I slept on this couch like several times. I mean, that's the thing. When I left LA, I really was done. I was going to go back to Iowa and sell real estate. And I've never had a plan fail as spectacularly as that plan failed. And so I ended up sleeping. I know, right? I mean, God, I was just done. I was just like smoking weed outside of like a warehouse in Echo Park. And I was like, my name's Dave Good. I can just go back to Iowa where like I know everyone, sell a bunch of houses and just, you know, find a single mom and cash it in. I was just ready to be done. And whatever, that didn't work. And so it was after the fire, I was sleeping on this couch. And Patrick was like, you got to see this movie called The End of the Tour. I don't know if you guys have seen The End of the Tour. It's about David Foster Wallace. Has anyone here seen The End of the Tour? What the fuck, hipsters? Yeah, okay. So anyways, I love David Foster Wallace. He's like the patron saint of introverted Midwestern dudes. And there's a movie, he's played by
Jason Segel.
Who I'm often...
Oh, I love him.
Yeah, and I'm often compared to Jason Segel depending on like where my weight is at. Like heavier Dave is Jason Segel, and like skinnier Dave is Jake Gyllenhaal. And so I can know like where I'm at based on who's humoring. But like both of the characters in the movie are named David. It happens in Minneapolis. I had just been through a fire. I was here alone on the couch. And I like watched this movie and I was like, fuck, I mean, I'm not David Foster Wallace, but I have some similarities to this guy. We both love the Mall of America, like, deeply. Like, people, like, I fucking love the Mall of America because it's, like, humanity as it is, you know? Like, Vegas is, like, yeah, it's, like, I'm just saying it's the medium shit show of America, whereas, like, Vegas is, like, the extreme shit show. Like, the Mall of America is just, like, us, and I feel very at peace. I feel like it's a mystical gateway. The same thing with Vegas. And I guess that's a good thing. I need to bring up mysticism because that is like how I tell my stories and like how this story came about is I just like do research and like remain open and then like whatever, as Patrick would say, random chance or as other people would say, like, you know, mystical forces come into play. They decide what my shows or stories are about. And that's how this particular story came about. So that's that. That brings up to date. Now we're on the same page. Thank God. Okay, so my least favorite question that people ask me about this show, like, and it just happened the other day at work, they're like, so I was like, because, I mean, it's weird. Like, I get class-splained to all the time. That's a term I just came up with. But, like, rich people think that because they're rich that they can give me a lecture about anything at all just because, like, they've got a fancy coat on, and it is ridiculous because I'm always coming into contact with rich people because I move between classes effortlessly, and they're like, is it good? I like tell them I'm doing a show and they go, is it good? I'm just like, what the fuck kind of question is that? Like, people are like, I'm a plumber, are you a good plumber? You know, like, it's just a really fucked up thing to say. Like, of course it's good, you assholes. It's like, what the fuck? I just feel like everyone should be able to say what they do, and that should, like, be okay. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you shouldn't have to immediately defend yourself. Is it good? It just, like, is so insulting. Is it good? So, yeah, so I was, like, working on this show, and so I thought that I would start, like, researching comedians, right? Even though I don't do comedy, I love comedy. I mean, and I learned in LA that, like, I am not a comedian. Like, I'm not an expert joke maker, but I'm pretty good at finding things that are funny. Like, in terms of, like, finding territory that's funny, I actually do that at a pretty high level. I don't know if it's as high as my customer service skills are, which are freakishly unicorn high, but, like, that's the thing. And so I started by watching what I call the Holy Trinity of LA dude comics, and that is Joe Rogan, Anthony Jeselnik, and Chris D'Elia, right? I don't even want to get into Chris D'Elia because I don't want to just like, anyways, I haven't researched their backgrounds and stuff, and so Anthony Jeselnik, who I like, I don't know if you guys have heard of Anthony Jeselnik, he did 20 minutes on taking his friend to get an abortion. And it was this, like, amazing piece of comedy because he's, like, a white dude. But because he was taking his friend to get an abortion, like, that made it okay. And she was clearly like, hey, Anthony, can you take me to get an abortion? I'll let you tell jokes about it. And so I like him. I watched his interview with Joe Rogan. He was talking about comedy, and he said that, like, how could anyone, like, midlife, like a 40-something-year-old like me, ever like get into comedy because you wouldn't put up with the bullshit, you know, like you wouldn't want to go through all those clubs, which are awful. Comedians are fucking awful. And so I was like, yeah, Anthony Jeselnik, I'm going to do a fucking show from Patrick's living room, you know, like I'm not going to do it like that. And so, and then I watched Joe Rogan's second set. I don't know how familiar, I know like John is a fan of Joe Rogan. He's kind of complicated. Sometimes I call him Bro Brogan, or I like to think of him as like Bro Brogan. But the thing is, I watch his stand-up. He always triggers me, right? And I'm trying not to trigger anyone with my work. I want to like mildly offend people. Like occasionally, that's just like kind of like how it goes, you know? I mean, like, it's really about honesty, right? Like, I mean, like, what I'm doing here on this show is I'm, like, being completely honest while I record it. There's no fakey fake in here. And I feel like that's, like, what you're trying to do and, like, what it comes down to. And so when I'm watching these comics, I'm also doing research. Like, are they, like, telling me the truth about who they are? Like, they'll tell some jokes and then I fucking Wikipedia them and be like, what did your dad do? Was he a working class guy? Or are you lying about your dad being a working class guy? Because people always fucking lie about that shit. And so, whoa, I just had a really big deja vu. So, anyways, Bro Brogan triggered me. And when he said, he was talking about sexual harassment, right? He was like, I didn't think I was sexist until I started thinking about what would happen if an older lady sexually harass my son, right? Who I don't have. Like, but if I had a son and some older woman was like, you need to fuck me to get a job, I would say, fuck that old lady. They don't give Ferraris away, right? You need to fuck that old lady to get that Ferrari. And that triggers the shit out of me because I'm quintessentially a person who does not fuck old ladies, right? And like, if I did, I already had that gateway entree into Hollywood in my life a couple of times. I don't mean to say old lady, but a lady significantly older than me, right? And so that really triggered me. And honestly, this show, this Dave Good show, is a direct fuck you to that concept. Like, I don't believe that anyone should have to fuck anyone to do what they want to do, right? Like, you should have to, like, I don't know, like, clean up extra, like, show up early, stay late, like, that kind of shit. But just, like, I'm not down with people having to fuck anybody. And so that's when I'm just like, fuck you, holy trinity of bro comics. Like, I want to, like, dig back into my favorite comedian of all time, who was Bill Hicks, right? Of course, Bill Hicks. Correct, John. Correct answer. Best comedian of all time, right? Right, right, right. Totally. Bill Hicks, the greatest of all time, at least according to, like, 42-year-old dudes from Iowa or Minnesota. And so I'm like, I'm going to dig into Bill Hicks. You know, I'm going to dig into Bill Hicks. And the first thing I did is I, like, read this interview about him and what today's young comics think about Bill Hicks, right? It was an article in The Guardian. And I was shocked, right? One of these comedians was like, I don't like his jokes about, like, one, they called him misogynist. I mean, fine, right? Like, there's definitely parts of his material that are that. I mean, that's kind of the thing about being in the honesty game, is I feel like when you, like, go back and go through a comedian's entire work, like, I know every single joke that Bill Hicks has told, every single one. Some of them I'm not okay with, you know, but, like, that's just kind of how it goes. I think that's the thing about being honest, is if you're going to be honest about how you feel about all these things, well, some of it is going to maybe not read that well to everyone, but that, I just think that's the nature of the art form. And so, and then one of the other guys called him a pedophile, and I was like, what the fuck? How is this possible? So I went back through the entire Bill Hicks catalog looking for this joke, looking for this problematic joke. And there is this thing about Bill Hicks that he's got this, like, sexual alter ego, Randy Pan the Goat Boy. And, like, I never quite knew how I felt about Randy Pan the Goat Boy. Like, I don't necessarily like it, but Randy Pan the Goat Boy talks about fucking a 16-year-old girl, right, in one of his acts. And I was like, okay. I mean, that's, yes, that's bad. Also, he's doing it as Randy Pan the Goat Boy, not as himself. So I, like, wouldn't call that a pedophilia joke. But then I thought, like, how the fuck do you tell a joke about fucking a 16-year-old and, like, not getting some kind of trouble, you know? It kind of seems like you should get in trouble. And this is the problem. This is, like, why I'm not a comedian and, like, why I'm kind of, like, part journalist, because then I start, like, doing research, right? And I'm like, where the fuck did he tell this joke? He told it in Edinburgh, Scotland. What is the age of consent in Edinburgh, Scotland? Fucking 16 years old, right? Of course. Of course, it's fucking 16 years old. So I'm like, whatever, Dave, you're not going to talk about consent on your show. You're supposed to be, like, doing fun stuff for the people, you know? And so I'm like, cool, I'm going to switch to Richard Pryor, and I'm going to watch Richard Pryor's material. because I hadn't seen it in a while. And, like, he's continually brought up as, like, the greatest comedian of all time, you know? So I dig into Richard Pryor, you know? And, yeah, I mean, I do think I think it becomes readily apparent that he is the best in the sense that he is the most honest, you know? Like, he is talking about, he starts live on the Sunset Strip being like, I shot my car because I didn't want my wife to leave me in the car that I bought. And he's talking about shooting his car. And he totally fucking shot his car. Like, there's no fake vulnerability. There's no fake, nothing is fake about this, you know? And that, I think, is, like, why he's considered the greatest. I mean, like, Maria Bamford, I don't know if you saw any of her recent stand-up, but she talks about Richard Pryor, refers to him as the greatest, and then also says he has secret material about the difference between hitting white women and hitting black women, right? Again, problematic, not for that, but so I get into Richard Pryor, right? And Richard Pryor says in his jokes, this is the second time it happens, my dad died when he was 57, fucking an 18-year-old girl. Isn't that amazing? And everyone cheers. That's like early 70s LA. Everyone cheers, right? People are really excited during that show that he gives. People scream a lot of things. So I'm like, okay, Dave, the problem is that now you've had this thing come up a second time. Comedians telling joke about sex with people who are too young. You gotta go the complete other way and you gotta watch Nanette, right? I'm gonna watch Hannah Gadsby's Nanette, right? And I'm gonna give the last word. I mean, really, on behalf of Michelle, who's here, I'm like, it's nice to have other people here. It changes how I think of things. You know, I'm gonna watch Nanette, right? And of course, she has a joke about older men sleeping with younger women in her set, right? She gets into Picasso. She fucking hates Picasso, right? And she says Picasso is a pedophile. He fucked a 17-year-old girl, right? And I saw that, I'm like, look, Hannah, I'm so many steps ahead of you right now. I don't know what the age of consent was in Paris in 1927, but it sure as hell was younger than 17. In fact, it's fucking 14, right? 14. Which, by the way, is still the age of consent in Italy. But it moves up to 16 in case you are an adoptive parent. That's what it says in Wikipedia, right? This is fucking fucked. This is fucked. Okay, this is fucked. This is totally fucked. And so I'm like, look, Hannah, Picasso is not a pedophile. Paris is a pedophile. Italy is a pedophile. Oh, Minnesota, 16, pedophile. Minnesota is a pedophile. So what the fuck is going on here, right? So I'm like thinking then about like Me Too, right? And I'm thinking about how just like sex with older people is so like intimately laced into the entertainment business, you know? And like this is how I've been led to performing in a living room is because I don't want to, you know, fuck any ladies or suck any cocks. Like, I just don't want to do that. Like, it's like, bro, Brogan, I am the Ferrari. He's like, you want a Ferrari? No, I'm the Ferrari, bro, Brogan. Fuck you, I'm the Ferrari. So anyways, I just thought about talking about all this Me Too shit. Like, we could change these fucking laws. Like, we could just change these fucking laws and make it be that, hey, how about coaches can't have sex with their athletes? That's a huge deal. $500 million settlement is what Michigan State paid, just in case you wondered. Let's just change the fucking laws. Because you dig into these sexual harassment laws, they're so obtuse. Like, I'm just, like, Googling, like, can a teacher at the University of whatever sleep with a student? Oh, here's 17 pages of legal jargon, you know? Like, let's just simplify all this shit. No teachers can sleep with their students. No coaches. I mean, like, I'd like to say no directors can sleep with their stars, but, like, let's be realistic. You know? Fame is very intoxicating. People want to be famous super badly. I don't know how to stop that, like, exchange from happening. And the other thing about harassment, right, is I was thinking about how you can accidentally harass people and not realize that you're doing it, or you could say something that would be construed as such. And I was like, I got to think of a joke of like how I would accidentally say something inappropriate at work. And the joke I came up with was, did you read the New Yorker article about the clitoris, right? Because like I could say that on accident and then someone could be like, no, hey, fuck that. But then I accidentally fucked up at work on my own without writing this joke. Because we had this coffee cup controversy at my job. Like, we changed the size of the coffee cups. And the people got very agitated, right?
And it's not so, bottomless.
And no, it is.
The size.
Yeah, exactly. No, the size of the free refill cup became like super controversial. And so this got like brought up just like 2 days ago. And I was like, all the dudes here prefer different cup sizes. Coffee cup sizes, coffee cup sizes. Right? I said that. And the male like got quiet and looked at me. And so I'm just saying, I feel like we get caught up in that shit with like harassment where we get into these like super gray area things that we want to talk about. But there's some other shit that's not a gray area at all that we should totally fix. And just like, how strange is it that like Hannah Gadsby can make that joke and we all just accept that this must be true. And in fact, like, it's not, I mean, it's, I'm opposed to that, you know, that's, and everyone is, but like, it's not. And I think the reason it's not legislated is because people are like, well, what if I want to like sell my 16-year-old daughter for a bunch of land into the hands of some like wealthy dude? And like, I think it's really rooted in like this agricultural, you know, it's fucking patriarchy. I mean, that's the thing that I was just thinking when I was watching Hannah. I'm like, I just feel like we need to be on the same page with patriarchy and how like fundamentally fucked up it is that it like commodifies our bodies, you know? I was talking about that with some younger women and this girl was like, my Twitter or my Tinder is just, do you have a boat? That's my Tinder. Do you have a boat? And then the other one was like, we're like bonobos, you know, we just want to exchange sex for boat rides, you know? And I just want to think that we're aspiring to a world that is not about exchanging sex for boat rides, you know? And I didn't like necessarily want to talk about this, but it like kept coming up. Like I like dug into all these comedians and, you know, and that's comedy. So I'm just saying, you know, we could change some laws, and why hasn't there been any legislation post Me Too? I mean, doesn't that fucking make sense that we would like have some legislation that happens rather than like continue to battle in these fucked up gray areas? So like what I'm saying is that I've been trying to date moms lately, right? Like I'm trying to date moms because that's like where I'm at, you know? Like if I want to like be an age appropriate single producer guy, then I'm probably gonna end up dating some moms, you know? And because like that's like my age range. And whenever I talk about dating moms, people are always like, ugh, what about the kids, you know? Like, don't you feel weird being around someone else's kids? No, they're fucking kids. Like, that's the whole thing, is like kids are like, they're not even formed yet, we're supposed to all be nice to them, you know? People are like always worried about the kids, and like the kids aren't the problem. The fucking dads are the problem. It's like, what about the dad? Because the dad is always fucking my shit up, right? The dad is always not taking those fucking kids on the weekend that he says he's gonna take those fucking kids. And like, I make plans and I can't go through with my plans because of these fucking dads. And it's like, dude, I'm trying to help you out, dad. Like, you don't want to talk to this lady, you don't want to hang out with this lady, her like stress is fucking with your life, and I'm trying to like calm all that shit down for you, and you are like not helping me at all. And yeah, like bros before hoes, dad, you know? So the thing is though, and then I started thinking about it, which I try to do with my jokes, and it's like, look, Dave, don't you think that maybe one of these women that you were trying to date, one of these moms is like using dad, fictitious bad dad who wasn't fucking with you, right? Maybe she's just saying this is a way to like not commit to you. And I know that that's a fucking fact, but like the bad dads are like giving them an easy option to cover, you know? So really, it's not the kids that are the problem. It's that I have to be in the shit show of a failed relationship with the adults. The adults are the problem, you know, because it's like an ex that you can't get rid of. Like, you can't get rid of dad. You have to deal with dad. It's bullshit. So, you know, that's my thoughts about dating and moms, consenting adults. I mean, I just like that. I feel like that's kind of the soul of comedy, is like you consent to be here and consent to like give me the benefit of the doubt, and I consent to like try to be funny, you know? So that's my thoughts about consent. could anyone text me? No one texted me. So you guys don't want to say anything out loud because it's on record.
I was feeling good, but now I'm frightened as hell.
Yeah. Understandable.
That's the best time. Yeah. That's the best time to ask a question.
No, I mean,
you're
I took
still
you.
Still in the intro.
Right.
I'm a little afraid that Patrick's drink is too strong.
Oh, yeah, no.
I think
that's understandable.
Strong. Yeah, that's, you know.
It's understandable. So.
He's like, so sorry.
That's Saturday night strong. Yeah.
That's
strong. That's what my mother wants.
No, I'm very happy about it.
Okay, so. Anyway, so part of this podcast is. There's a podcast within the podcast, right? I mean, the other thing that's nice about this being a podcast, of course, that Patrick will chop this up. I mean, I like that. So,
the magic in the editing.
Yeah, the magic is in the editing, you know? So the podcast in the podcast is like about my story of producing in LA, right? And I have it divided into three parts. And I've done one whole part of it already. And then the thing is, I know that like not everyone here has like heard the first part of it. So I need to do like a previously on the Dave Good Show. And that's at that, like the basic, the nuts and bolts of it are that I like moved to LA with a lot of connections, right? I had like done a lot of work. They say you're supposed to build a bridge to LA. And I had built that fucking bridge, I thought. I had plans. I had one of these books, like, full of many pages of stuff. And none of that shit worked out. Culminating in me, like, being in a apartment with a black bunny rabbit that was covered in shit. And that led me to leave that apartment and move into a house full of stand-up comedians. Which was, like, my entree into Los Angeles comedy. Even though most of them were not funny. Only one of them was funny. Only Uncle Mike was funny. And Uncle Mike became my friend and my comedy mentor and like took me to some parties and stuff and whatever. It's in the podcast. And so, but I'm living at this house. For a while it was called the Comedy Ranch when Mike was there, but there were two other guys there, both named Dave. So we called it Dave Town, right? So I'm living in Dave Town with the two Daves. And Mike has left, right? And like, Mike was kind of like our leader. You know, he was like in his 50s. He was from Canada. And yeah, he was from Toronto. Yeah, yeah, I know, right? What a dream. What a dream, yeah. Canadians are the best. I mean, in LA, it was like a lot of friendship with Canadians because like they're similar to Minnesotans. And so.
Buffalo Springfield.
There you go, Buffalo Springfield. Right. So Mike left, and this was kind of causing the like it just threw off our balance, and everyone there, to varying degrees, had mental health issues. Right. Like there was this day where they're like, Dave, we just cannot believe how healthy you are. Like you buy groceries as soon as you're out of groceries. You know. And they're like, and you take showers every other day. And you, like, apply for... So they left. And I didn't know what to do when Mike left. Because, like, now, like, everybody's cumulative mental health issues are, like, bringing me down. And I don't really have any money. And I don't really have anywhere to go. I don't really know what the fuck I'm going to do, you know? Like, we got cockroaches and, like, PTSD and bipolar and OCD, you know? There's some serious problems. But everyone's, like, lovely. I really like them. That's the thing is I really like these people. Particularly Dave, the second Dave. Dave was, like, raised by, like, two really rad moms in New York City. And then he, as a way of like establishing his own identity, decided to join the Marines. Mm. And then he got sent to a fraudulent and incorrect war based on money and really fucked up by that, you know? Like, I don't want to get into what Dave had to do over there, but it makes me mad when people are like, that war wasn't a big fucking deal, because they practically destroyed Dave, and just Dave was one of the, is one of the best of us, you know? He's fucking ridiculously brilliant guy. I mean, he's just one of those guys where, like, you know, you, like, think of, like, I've had a few profound experiences with Marines in my life. I actually really like the Marines. I don't know, you know, I just, I've had some really rad conversations with, like, really liberal social justice Marines, you know, and Dave is, like, the greatest of them. And so, but things are not going that well, and somehow we're outside smoking, which is what we do, cigarettes and weed every day, all day. And I'm like, they're in a conversation, they're like, hey, we can all agree cats suck, right? We can all agree that cats suck. And I'm like, what the fuck are you guys talking about? Cats are awesome. And they're like, no, cats are the worst. We can prove it on, like, a graph. And I'm like, you guys just haven't met a cool cat, right? That's, like, your issue. You have yet to run into, like, a cool cat. And then, like, right at this moment, like, here comes this cat, like, running up. And I just go, hello, Colonel Kitty, because he looks like a colonel. Like, he's got super poofy whiskers. And he's like a cat I'm not allergic to. It's called an Abyssinian cat. Anyways, Colonel Kitty, this like perfect cat. And I'm like, hey, Colonel Kitty, do you want some tuna? And I go and get some tuna and I feed this cat, you know. And I'm like, see, this cat is rad, you know. And like, Colonel Kitty's a very aware cat. So that's what I'm saying. I know we went into some difficult territory, but I have a cat story for you. So like, it's going to be fine. And that's like a real Bill Hicks thing. You know, you take people into terrible places, but then you bring them back to the cushy belly of a kitty. And so I go home. I'm going home to get my brother's car from him and then drive that car back to L.A. So I go home and get that car, and then I come back, and, like, they've gone crazy about the cats. There's this huge bag of, like, industrial cat food, and they've started feeding all the stray cats of Los Angeles, right? And so now there are just all these fucked up, janky-ass cats, one-legged cats, one-eyed cats, mangy cats, and Colonel Kitty is pissed. And Colonel Kitty is like the ultimate cat, so there'll be like a cat eating from that food, and then Colonel Kitty will come out of nowhere and then kick the shit out of that cat. There'll be like literal cat fights, which are super disturbing when you're like smoking weed and then suddenly like two cats get in like an insane fight. And I was like, I didn't think you guys were going to start feeding all the cats. I just thought we could have a relationship with this, like, one cat, you know. And so now there's all these cats, and they, like, are... The mental health issues have continued to spiral downward, right? And so I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to get a big whiteboard, right? And I get this whiteboard, and I bring it out to the smoking section. And I'm like, hey, we're going to write our goals and dreams on this board. And we're all going to, like, make lists. We're going to mind map. We're going to do things. And I'm going to, like, because I can't get out of this house, I'm just going to raise everyone up, right? And, like, this is going to work. I used to do, like, collective mind mapping in a very nice gallery in Northeast. Like, what could possibly go wrong with doing it here with them? And so I, like, start writing some things. I write some of my goals. I'm like, you guys write some of your goals. And this one girl's like, I have no goals. You know, I'm like, okay, we're going to write things about, like, what your goals could be. So so I do that. And then I go, like, my life is, you know, like, I'm, like, networking. I don't know what's going on. But my life is, like, beginning to happen. My life in L.A. is, like, beginning to happen in spite of all these things. And so I leave the whiteboard alone. And then I come back. And now the bipolar girl has told the OCD guy, please tell me your top 100 movies. And so they're like scribbling like all these tiny movies like down my whiteboard, this like whole list. And they're like, no, no, that doesn't go at number 47. That goes at like 44. And this like, this goes on for like 36 hours, the two of them, the whiteboard, like writing every movie down. And I'm like, oh no, like the whiteboard has gone wrong. And then the next day there's just like almost like written in blood, but not really, just says The Departed on the board. And I'm like, oh god, what has happened? And then like they get rid of The Departed, and then, you know, there's like those legends of like Have you heard this? There's like a manuscript that, like, if you read it, you'll go crazy. Have you heard these things? Or like, there's a song, and if you hear that song, you'll like lose your mind. So this whiteboard is now just a collection of like bizarre lines. And like, I see these lines, I'm like, that is the devil. Like, that is the scariest collection of lines that I've ever seen. And I like immediately erase those lines. And I'm like, what the fuck am I gonna do? Like, I've tried to cheer these people up and that has failed. And now I'm living in this house full of dysfunctional people. And I'm a big believer in like who you spend your time around has a huge determining factor of like who you become. You know, and like my mental health issues are starting to like come up because I'm in this like unhealthy place. And then like out of nowhere, the Marines come to the house. They like show up in a black sports car and it's Dave's friends. It's his crew, the Marine intelligence crew. And they like show up and they're like, Dave, we got to get you out of here. And they clean up his room and the entire place. They take the bipolar girl, who is actually his girlfriend, to therapy. They're like, we've got therapy set up for her. No problem. Inpatient 30-day program. And they take her to therapy. They clean up Dave. They take Dave out of there. And like Dave's in the back of the black sports car. And he goes, they'll get me a job at PricewaterhouseCoopers as soon as I feel better. And then they drive away. You know? They drive away. And so they're like gone. And at first it's kind of nice, but also I know that new people are going to be moving into the house, you know, and roommates like have a time frame. Groups just kind of have a lifespan, you know. And so they are now gone, but I've got this huge bag of cat food and like all of these cats, right? And I don't know what to do because they're like dependent on the cat food. And so I'm like, okay, I got to find a new place to live. But in the meantime, I will continue to feed these cats. But like, I'm just going to feed them until like, whatever. I absolve myself. I'm like, you can take care of these cats as long as you're here. Then the cats will just have to figure it out for themselves. And so now everyone's gone. I'm there by myself. I'm outside smoking tons of weed and I'm surrounded by like 9 cats, you know? I'm just like hanging out with these cats and I was just like, I guess I'll watch Cats. So I brought my laptop out and I put on Andrew Lloyd Webber's Cats and I watched Cats with like 9 cats. So what I'm saying is the last time I was like in front of a group of people this size and this context, they were cats.
What was the number one movie on the board?
The Departed.
Okay.
They decided The Departed was the best movie of all time, which is a pretty good movie, I gotta say.
I don't think I've seen it.
Oh, it's good. And then the other guy, the OCD guy, like, there was a moment where he was like, you know, sometimes I feel like I should just leave Hollywood and move back to Missouri and open up a memorabilia shop. And I was like, yeah. Do it right now, you know? Because, I mean, that's just kind of the thing. Like, this house that I was at was like a way station. It was people coming in L.A. and people going out of L.A., you know? So,
did any neighbors come up to you and say, why are you feeding all these cats?
No. None of the neighbors wanted to talk to us because we were like a beachhead of gentrification. It was, like, super tragic, you know? So, like, it was not a good... was not a good situation. And we would do like comedy shows there in this like 98% Latino neighborhood and would just be like all whitey white people. So no, they didn't ask where we were feeding all the cats. But man, there are a lot of cats in LA. There's a ton of cats. So what else? You got any other questions?
It's like The Long Goodbye makes me think of.
Oh yeah, what's that?
Ilya Gould. It's a Robert Altman.
No, this is one of those.
There's a whole cat scene at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And it's super LA. Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I love the cats of LA.
I but knew yeah. a guy who
I did it
that.
First, then it was like too many cats. Like, yeah. Each cat was progressively more fucked up than the, you know, eventually there were some really janky ass looking cats who, like, you weren't like, oh, this cat is adorable. Mm. You're like, I don't want to touch this cat. Yeah. So
is that a metaphor for roommates?
I mean, it is kind of. I mean, roommates are like a come and go. I mean, I know that like John has a house full of roommates. Like, he owns a house and
gives like that.
Yeah, just like there's like rooms, like it's good for a while, and right then it goes south, and then it becomes good again and goes south. So
it's probably like working in a restaurant.
It is probably like working in a restaurant.
Just people.
Yeah, coming and going. Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, I've realized that, like, I like working in a daytime restaurant because I wake up, like, to get this show done, I have to wake up every, now I go to get to work at 6, every day at 6. And, like, that is fucked up, but it's also fucked up that, like, now I have to, like, I say that and people makes them think I'm working harder than if I got to work at 6 p.m., and that pisses me off. Because, like, now I'm just, like, feeding into that whole, like, morning people work harder than night people, which isn't true. I just feel like morning people are, like, more of a spaz than night people are. And it makes people think that they're, like, doing a lot because they, like, wake up in spaz, whereas night people are, like, more chill. So, yeah. So, any questions about anything that I've talked about? Any of that stuff?
There's another female comedian you briefly mentioned that I don't know, Maria.
Oh, Maria Bamford.
Okay.
Isn't she from Duluth?
Yeah, she's from Duluth. She's a big deal.
Yeah.
She's super amazing. She's got a show called Lady Dynamite.
Okay.
She's bipolar.
Yes, she also has mental health issues. I'm like vaguely in her circle. But yeah, she's quite good. She did like a one-woman show out of Duluth for a while. Like she dabbles back in there, but I saw her at the Acme, and like one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life was her making dinosaur noises for like 5 minutes. It's like, but she's like high level. She does voices. She does voices on BoJack Horseman, if you watch that show. But yeah, she's super, super great. But I mean, I still love Bill Hicks. I dug back into Bill Hicks. What I liked about Bill Hicks is like he did not. There were still big areas that he. He doesn't do women are like this, men are like this jokes, you know, black people are like this, white people are like this jokes. Like, I hate those jokes, and they don't really do a lot, you know. I guess I was going to talk more about, like, being, like, a white man talking, you know. And, I mean, I just think that's the thing. It's just, like, you just have to find areas what you can talk about. Like, I can talk about sexual harassment in the entertainment business because I've, like, experienced that firsthand. Like several times. You just want to stay in the things that you know about and don't talk about shit that you don't know about. And then you're trying to talk about things that you uniquely know about, you know? And, you know, but I mean, luckily I'm not like wealthy, so I don't think I know about everything all the time, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, because I did some, like, there's been a lot of, you know, there was like a whole kind of, that's the thing about like, yeah, so there's, you know, like, white men talking, like, there's a lot of that. But then there's this podcast called the El Chapo Trap House Podcast, you know what I'm talking about? It's like a progressive dude podcast. And they're like, look, I just agree with them. Like, I believe that we should have equal representation of leadership, etc. But, like, this is, like, me and Patrick just doing a fucking podcast in his living room. Like, this is not that, you know? This is just, like, this is just us being creative together, you know. Oh, and I was going to bring that up earlier, too, that, like, I know I make some jokes based on conversations that we've had, and sometimes, like, Patrick says things to me that I don't agree with, and then I address them on the podcast when he cannot retort. And so...
Very passive-aggressive.
Yeah. I don't...
See, you're my son.
I know. It's, yeah. Like, I don't mean to, but that's kind of, like, how it goes. Like, and I didn't want to, like, I also thought I'm like, I could, like, say specific fuck yous to these jokes that some comedians make that I don't like, but then I don't, like, necessarily want to do that. But it's like a conversational thing. That's like when I left Iowa, or when I left LA, I was like, I'm gonna move to a small town in Iowa, just like my grandpa. My grandpa was like a big time Vegas guy, and then just cashed it all in and hooked up with my grandma. I mean, I feel like that's a part of why I was like gonna just give it up, you know. But then I've got nobody to piss me off, and then there's nothing to make jokes about, you know. Like, I need people to bother me. But yeah. Probably going to do this once a month if, like, Patrick's on board. I think I can do a fresh 51 every month. And that's like, because another thing about comedians, like, they're telling the same jokes over and over.
Yeah.
I mean, I just have no urge to fucking do that. Or, like, I mean, granted, like, every day I'm like, do you need room for a cream? You know, like, I say that 1,000 times a day, but I would just rather. And the thing is, like, I don't really want, like, fully formed Dave Good Show. Like, I would do some of this, and then there would be, like, a comedian, and then there would be a band, and then that would, like, be the show, mm-hmm. you know? And so I'm, like, building towards that. But because I've got, I don't, you know, I try to do a Dave Good Show without Dave Good in it, and people did not like that. That made them very mad. And so I made a new Dave Good Show with, like, myself in the show, so they can have their Dave Good time, and then I can seed it, because, like, it's really about, more than anything, it's about, like, the chips and the drinks and the cool people and the, like, something nice to do and the, like, casual time commitment, and, you know, that's, like, more of what it's about.
I would just ask, if you do decide to do the last week on the Dave Good Show,
yeah,
can I say that?
Oh, fuck yeah, you can say that.
Someone else.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally. Oh, yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah. Did you just call shotgun?
Yeah. There's lots of opportunities for that. And
you're,
like,
the first right of refusal, but.
Yeah.
I know you like.
I mean, Patrick does the, you've been listening to the Dave Good Show.
Oh, yeah.
He does that.
I'm happy to.
Which is new, which was shocking, because, like, getting Patrick on the podcast was, like,
it's actually very soothing.
Months of work.
Call it in on a telephone.
Oh, right.
Record it that way.
Yeah, I will leave your answering machine message for $7 for sure to the show. There's, like, lots of.
I heard Carl Castle's an asshole.
I would believe it's true. I believe it's true. Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, he's dead.
You mean to speak ill of the dead?
No. No. Well, and just, like, there's something fundamentally fucked up about performers who are willing to go down that, like, that's the thing about the Holy Trinity of dude comics, right? They run the Comedy Store in LA, and, like, I know what a fucked up culture that is. And, like, don't get me wrong, like, I agree or disagree, like, these are talented craftsmen of the joke. I mean, these are people who can totally do it. I just have no urge to fight that battle, you know? Anyways, back to the show. Like, there's lots of, I was going to do some commercials during this, and then I thought that I would record them with Patrick, like, later. Like, I need help on things. The only thing about helping is that you have to help me with the things that I need help with. You can't help me with things
that you want to do?
That I don't need help with.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know,
like,
just
helping you meet celebrities and that stuff.
Right, I don't need any help. I don't need any help. I don't need help meeting celebrities.
I'm not.
Yeah. I don't need any, like, corporate connects. Like, I need help, like my website looks old, you know. I need, like, help, like, getting this show into all the proper channels. Yes.
So what is the, why are you gonna do commercials? I'm confused.
Oh,
like,
so
actual,
like,
commercials, like,
no, not actual commercials.
So, like, Prairie Home Companion,
like, there is a little, like, I'm glad that you brought up a Prairie Home Companion. Right, no, just simmer down. I didn't mean to simmer down. Let me, because, like Bill Hicks has this great, my favorite Bill Hicks joke is, like, if you, anyone here in marketing or advertising, you're like, yes, and he's like, kill yourself, right?
Yeah.
That's his joke, and it's, like, one of my favorite jokes of all time. And I thought a lot about that, but then it was, like, also, like, I watched every single one of Bill Hicks's Letterman sets, and, like, he changed his jokes for Letterman, and, like, you're selling ads when you're doing Letterman. So, no, there would be an ad of me asking for help with the show, and then an ad of me asking for money for the show.
Okay.
So it's just me directly asking for the things that I need.
For the show.
No, not fake. No.
Terrible.
No.
No, okay. Paul Harvey.
No Paul Harvey.
Dual sponsorship.
What about, like, Animal Humane Society?
Yeah. No. No. No PSAs of any kind. I'm just trying to, like. Yeah, that was, like, another thing. Like I said, I don't know exactly what I said, but I was, like, I was also going to be, like, oh, I'm going to use the C word frequently. And that word is capitalism, you know, because, like, you're not allowed to talk about capitalism. If you say capitalism, I know people get super mad about saying the word capitalism, because then you're, like, acknowledging that it's a thing and you can't do that. It's just the way it is. So, like, I'm trying to figure out how to operate okay inside of capitalism. So I'm like not always waking up at 6 a.m. Like I believe in this show. Mm-hmm. I believe that this can like be a show. So yeah, but in terms of A Prairie Home Companion, like it's pretty wild that they tried to make that show again with someone from Oceanside, California.
Oh, really?
Like what the fuck? Yeah, it's called Live From Here now. And it's kind of fucked because I like know the people who produce it and stuff are like people that I know. The thing about like this show or like about like The Tonight Show, I was going to ask you, Patrick, did you watch the Gary Shandling documentary that I gave you?
I have not.
I knew that you were going to say that.
Yes.
And there's such a setup.
How did you give it to him?
What's that?
Do you actually have a hard copy?
I have a hard copy of this documentary about a comedian
yeah.
who I'm obsessed with on my fucking mantle with track lights on it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Patrick, who records my podcast 2 months ago,
tonight,
I'm going to give this to you. You have to give it back.
That's my homework.
And he does not even watch it.
In his defense, it's so hard when people tell you to watch something.
No, I know, yeah. I know, but he took it. He physically took it from my hand.
Right. So I was going to say, I'll take it tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's on. I don't know if you've seen the Gary Shandling. Have you seen the Gary Shandling? Have you seen it?
The documentary?
Yeah.
No, I saw the show.
Oh, right. The,
Where
yeah.
did it release on? I might have seen it.
It's at HBO. The documentary
yeah,
is incredible. It's
yeah,
fucking incredible.
Because he's amazing.
And the show is incredible.
How's my hair?
Yeah. I need some kind of, like, indication that people are... like hooked into the show, and then I can like, yeah, but that's the plan. It's like once a month. I mean, like it's a show for everybody. I mean, that's the thing about the Dave Good Show is like, this is where like I express my love for everyone and like my willingness. I want everyone to be included. I want a space for that. I mean, I want to like set a particular tone, you know, but the Dave Good Show is for everyone.
Been listening to The Dave Good Show.